This one's called Peer Dues. In addition to providing a ferry service between North and South Queensferry, the Forfarshire made excursion trips for Edinburgh visitors, sailing from the Hawes Pier, under the bridge, and down the Firth as far as Inchcolme. It was quite a protracted trip, so any traveller unlucky enough to miss a crossing would be involved in a serious delay. Well, one summer morning, Johnny Campbell and I were watching the ferry boat pull away from the Toon Pier when a cyclist hove in sight, pedalling frantically. At the sight of the Forfarshire gradually moving off, his face fell. "Oh no," he groaned. "When'll she be back?"
3 o'clock, said Johnny.
"But it's only 11 now," he protested. We shrugged our shoulders, unmoved by the problems of long-distance travellers. "How far is it to Stirling?" he asked us.
20 miles.
Well, this information obviously jolted the stranger. In those days, of course, there was no such thing as the Forth Road Bridge. Finally, he asked, "Do you ken anybody that would row me across?" "Aye," responded Johnny, "us." The cyclist eyed us dubiously, especially me, a rather puny specimen at the time, but obviously he had little choice in the matter. "All right, then," he conceded, "get on with it."
"That'll be 1 and 6, announced Johnny calmly.
I managed to conceal my own astonishment at Johnny's sang-froid, but the cyclist was visibly outraged. He glared angrily at the pair of us and then paced up and down for a bit, fuming and eyeing the choppy waters separating him from the West Lothian coast, 1.5 miles to the south. "All right," he finally snapped out. "Come on, then." Immediately we headed for the Janet, a rowing boat whose owner, as we well knew, would be safely at work in one of the more distant Whinstone quarries, and helped our passenger and his bike on board.
"Here, you idiots," yelped our fare, "where do you think you're going?" as we briskly pulled due west toward the old station pier.
Johnny and I exchanged pitying glances at this display of ignorance on the part of our passenger. Still, he was our passenger, so Johnny grunted, "It's the ebb tide," by way of explanation as we bent to our oars. When we rounded the wreck, which lies somewhere below the present road bridge, and headed for HMS Rodney and the Hawes Pier beyond, even our landlubber cyclist began to catch on. The ebb current drew us downstream and deftly deposited us just off the pier, at which point we both stopped rowing and rested pointedly on our oars.
"Now what?" bellowed our passenger. 1 and 6, stated Johnny composedly.
Furious, our friend felt in his pockets, then withdrew and reluctantly handed over 1 shilling and 6. As we were unloading man and bike, the pier master spotted us and came running down from the direction of the Hawes Inn.
"Peer dues," he yelled at us, "4, peer dues, 4.
We pushed off like a flash, leaving the pier master prancing up and down at the end of the pier and shaking his fist at the escaping lawbreakers. We didn't feel too guilty about our crime, however. At least, we'd helped our cyclist on his way, reversing the situation described by Robert Louis Stevenson in Kidnapped, when Davy Balfour, the luckless young hero, was lured out of that same Hawes Inn by his uncle Ebenezer and enticed aboard the brig Covenanter bound for the Carolinas and slavery. Once safely back on the North Shore, we took special care to tie up the Janet exactly as we'd found her, wiping from her thafts, as boat seats were called at the ferry, all traces of bare feet, bicycle tyres, and illicit freight generally. Only then, all fatigue forgotten, were we free to succumb to the temptation of Granny Bell's shop, situated right at the head of the pier. Announced by the peal of the hanging bell at the door, we walked in, and to Granny's amazement, ignored the counter, turned left, and swaggered into that sacrosanct area known as the room.
Then we planted ourselves boldly down at the table in the manner of wealthy clients. "Twa bottles of lemonade," snapped Johnny at the dumbfounded proprietrix, "and 2 packets of Abernethy biscuits." Poor Granny, too flabbergasted to protest at the effrontery, placed the order in front of us. "And 2 tumblers," rapped out Johnny. Seldom were fairy lads allowed to savour such a triumph. We lounged at the oil-clothed table, crunching our biscuits and luxuriously sipping our lemonade from tumblers, while Granny laboured in a daze at the till to solve the maths problem involved. 1 penny each for the lemonades, plus 2 pennies apiece for the Abernethy biscuits, the total to be subtracted from the silver shilling piece. Since Johnny, the unchallenged leader of this exploit, was wearing a woollen jersey, the remaining money in the form of 1 sixpence, 3 pennies and 6 halfpennies was pressed into my shirt pocket and secured in place by my hanky. Just as we finished our Lucullan feast, we heard, as was sometimes possible if the wind was in the right direction, the 1 o'clock cannon fired daily from Edinburgh Castle across the water. Time now to finish and hurry home for dinner before our families got suspicious. But not before we'd made our plans for a post-prandial meeting. Our rendezvous? Charmer's shop, where bang went sixpence. Next, Granny Patterson's, where bang went our last sixpence. And on what? On lemonade and Abernethy's. What else?